The Send 4 Podcast. I'm Aaron Drews.
And I'm Stephen Horvath.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us on our very last episode this season. Our special guest today is the chair of the chemical engineering program, Dr. Zhang.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Liangfang Zhang. I'm a professor of nanoengineering and a director of chemical engineering program at UC San Diego.
Office, or are you at home? What's your schedule look like for switching back and forth?
So currently I'm at home, and I switch between home and office depends on the need. And but I think now I spend more time working at home.
So I think for our students who don't know your position at the university, you are not a teaching professor like me, but you're a research professor. So you've had to sort of balance between the teaching element of it, but also running an active research group. And so what has your balance looked like with something like that? Because you can only have, I think, 25% capacity in your lab right now, right?
Yeah, you're right. We are actually running a pretty big research laboratory. We have about 20 researchers in the lab, and this includes postdocs, scientists, and graduate students, even some master students. And we always needed to, and of course in my lab, we also have a lot of undergraduate students working in the lab as well. So it's really needed to balance the research and the teaching activities. And for example, if I'm not teaching, like this quarter I'm on sabbatical, then pretty much all dedicated to the research team. But during the regular quarter, when I teach a class and also running the research lab, I would say it's really based on the needs. And there's no clear cut, like what percentage should be dedicated to research, what percentage should be dedicated to teaching. It's based on the needs.
Mm-hmm. Do you still go back into campus sometimes, or do you leave those? I think we were talking with Jinhei, and she was saying she tends not to go back into her lab, because if she goes into her lab, that counts as one of the spots that she would rather have her students doing.
That applied to me too. So I'm on the our essential personnel list, of course. And but if I enter the lab very often, so because now there is the maximum capacity of the lab. When I go to campus, I mainly stay in my office. So that actually do not count the lab capacity.
Oh, okay. You can actually stay out of your lab and just be in your office.
What
is your office at home different now that you're using it so much for COVID? Because I know I, for one, am in quite a different situation than I normally am. So do you have an existing office that you can use at home?
Yeah, I do have a small home office. The difference is now I have a lot of sticker on the door, because I have two daughters at home. One is 7 years old, one is 11. So whenever I have a meeting, like now I need to put the do not disturb or meeting ongoing. And it's just very different from before, right?
Yeah. How are your, I imagine your kids are now adapting to learning at home too, right? So do they have their own little study spots as well, or do you all share the office and just come and go?
We set up some small working station in their own bedroom, and because of the schools, they have been like completely remote for a long time, and now they were back to school, but be prepared for turning to remote any moment. Because they monitor the students in the class. If there's any positive case, and then this class may turn to remote again. So we have to set up some desk for them in their bedroom, just in case they need to do the Zoom. Yeah.
Yeah, always a backup plan because it changes
day
to day at this point. Mm. Yeah. So when you first, let's see, I wasn't able to actually find exactly what year you started at UCSD, but when you started within the nanoengineering program, you actually helped found the program, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So, because you know, our nanoengineering department was founded in, like, officially founded in late 2007. Mm-hmm. And in 2008, we started to recruit faculty. And our colleague, Professor Zhu Wang, and I joined the department as the first two faculty on the same date. And but of course, even at that time, chemical engineering program has been housed in nanoengineering already. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that would be something that our students might be interested in knowing, because some of our sort of sister satellite campuses, right, they have a very established program. They've been around for 30 or 40 years or something like that. What was the original impetus, as you understood it, to create the nanoengineering department in the first place? Because it was unique at the time, right? I think now there's like two or three. But at the time when we made it, there was nobody else doing it. What was the idea behind it?
It's a really, we were absolutely the only one who is really called a nanoengineering department. Because, you know, from all the major research institutes, and nanotechnology research is very active everywhere. But what is missing is the working force, like the educating the next generation about nanotechnology and nanoscience. And UC San Diego took the first step and launched this department. I would say it is a very ambitious, and it's challenging because you really started from scratch. To be honest, very few people know what is nanoengineering. And but we feel that It is necessary, because this we envision that down the road nanotechnology will enter into a new era, that it becomes a norm and in industry and in everyday life. It just, no matter you pay attention to it or you don't, but it is there. And we feel that to provide education to the young generation specifically about nanoscience and nanotechnology is very critical. And that's why there is such a department launched there. And well, when we first do this, the goal was pretty reasonable. And we just like to see whether we can build the department up to 20 faculty. Mm-hmm. And then we can bring our students total up to like 400 undergraduate students. If we can reach that goal, we feel like successful. But later on, you see that the it really exceeds these numbers from all aspects. Today, yeah, we have like 30.
I was going to make a snarky comment that I think you aimed a little bit low, because we've blown past most of those metrics at this point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is great. I mean, that's a fantastic outcome for the program.
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as I understand, there was a practical reason for incorporating chemical engineering, which was to sort of give us that base of undergraduate students right away. But what was the reasoning that you could see of taking chemical engineering, which, as I understood it, was with mechanical at the time, mm-hmm. and branching off of mechanical and actually incorporating that into nano? What was the motivation behind that you could see?
So I think one of the reasons you just mentioned, and because chemical engineering has a long history at the UC San Diego, much longer than nanoengineering. And when Chemi become part of this nanoengineering department, it forms sort of like a foundation. But I think there is a more important reason is from the major and also the focus of the department point of view. Because, you know, nanoengineering has quite some emphasis on materials, nanoscale materials. Because no matter it is about nanoengineering, technology, or science, but behind that, there is materials. And chemical engineering and the material science, at certain points, they actually are quite close to each other. if you look at the nation, there are quite some departments, they have these two programs under the same roof. And comparing to mechanical engineering, that's where KME used to be. And we feel that the material science-oriented nanoengineering department could be a much better fit with KME. And then it can potentially generate synergies among these two programs. So I think that is another very important reason behind.
Yeah, a number of chemical engineering programs are far less mechanically oriented than perhaps they used to be. You know, now we hear of chemical and biomolecular or chemical and bioengineering, you know, these new applications or these new synergies with chemical engineering, where I think nano yes. also fits in there because of the amount of material science that we frequently encounter in our work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And I think that is something that's similar to some of the work you're doing right now, right? Could you give our students an overview of the kind of research that you do?
Yeah, my research is really like shows the advantage of combining chemical engineering and nano together. Because by training, I'm a chemical engineer. Mm-hmm. And but my research is really focused on nanomedicine. So what we did is we created this called biomimetic nanomedicine. And generally speaking, we created these teeny tiny nanoparticles with a size around 100 nanometer. And we use these nanoparticles for a variety of different medical use. And we deliver the drug to a specific site of the body to make the drug less toxic but more potent. And we use these nanoparticles to manipulate our immune system and to make the immune system work for the human to fight for disease. And we remove all the biological toxins, block the virus and bacteria. So this research, you see, is a very nanotechnology. It's a hardcore of nanomedicine. And but meanwhile, I'm a chemical engineer, and mm-hmm. many of the researchers in my lab are chemical engineers. And yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just had a question. You know, being that you are a chemical engineer, and you know my experience with chemical engineering and folks that are in that area, out of all the engineerings, that seems like the one that's easiest, or not easiest, but that makes a stepping stone toward the medical field if you decide to go into the medical field. I was just wondering how you got interested in medicine and if you ever considered going into medicine with that chemical engineering degree. I mean, I know you're doing medical research, but I mean, has that been ever anything you ever considered? Because it is a stepping stone a lot of times to like a medicine.
Yeah, I would say these days when you do medical research, you don't have to have a medical degree. And these days, all these majors are getting more and more multidisciplinary. Especially, like I like to tell our students, chemical engineering is a very unique major. It is much wider and broader than what we normally think about chemical engineering. And we can work in the more traditional chemical engineering area, like the oil business, and other plastics and other things. But on the other side, the fundamental engineering principles we learn in chemical engineering can be easily expanded to other fields, pharmaceutical science, medical science, and so on. And it is very common these days that if you look at all the chemical engineering departments across the country, and you will see those outstanding researchers, they are working on very diversified area, medical right. in particular. Mm. Yeah.
No, thank you. Mm-hmm.
We just had a little while ago, we had a stream with our students where we had the opportunity to visit some various pieces of equipment around campus that are more on the traditional side of chemical engineering. And something that you had just pointed out is something I try to emphasize to our students. Whenever anybody tries to draw a circle around this is what chemical engineering is, they're almost inevitably going to leave out a massive chunk of other things that chemical engineers can do because, as you said, it's such a flexible degree that if you try to create a list of saying this is what chemical engineers do, you always end up leaving stuff out because there's so much that we can do. Why do you think that is? What is it about the undergrad or the grad program in chemical engineering that makes the degree so flexible?
Yeah, that actually is a really good question. I think this is for many of the chemical engineering experts or the department chairs, they will often talk about. So what is the current chemical engineering and why chemical engineering is a unique major and is welcomed by many different fields? I tend to think that chemical engineering is sort of like a major that sit at sort of like the crossing area. It can bridge to many different other majors. Because, for example, if you want to make something work, no matter this is a battery energy area or it's a medical area or it's the oil business area, there are certain fundamental engineering principles there. Like those we learned in our classroom, for example, the reaction, the separation, and this is thermodynamics. And all these fundamental principles, I think they can be applied to many other areas. This is one of the reasons. And the second reason is chemie is really established area, and it has been studied and designed in such a way that it's sort of like a quite complete. And so the things, knowledge our students or researchers learn in this area, now they can be applied to other newer majors, right? If you look at medical research, pharmaceutical research, or the novel energy research, I think their history is much younger than this chemical engineering. So that's why I think this fundamental knowledge we learn in chemical engineering, it can be really expanded to other areas. I always like to give one example to our students is when we talk about this, because what I just described is kind of abstract. But if you think about for chemical engineering, when we learn about a factory, like this traditional refinery or this factory, you talk about these pipes, these reactors, all connected together. And we started to measure this, the flow rate, the temperature, how this thing can be regulated. Now, if you take a moment to think about your own body, actually, if you look at this from your heart to your lung to this, all the key organs, and each of them is like a reactor. And they are connected by your artery, your vein, and then from the major artery, it goes to the smaller one and to the capillary blood vessel. The flow in this blood vessel, of course, is very important to every single person. But how these flow are regulated? What is when people take a medicine? Then your first thing when the drug gets to the body is sort of like the fluid dynamics. Now when they get to the smaller capillaries, now it's dominated by diffusion, right? Mm-hmm. And when they send it to the tissue, to the cells, and to a specific cells, they cross the cell membrane, it's determined by permeation. So permeability rate, everything determines the whole drug diffusion and everything. So if you start to think this way, you will see that why these fundamental principles and these rules that we need to follow are actually the same.
That's a great explanation. Thanks, sir. Thank you.
Where would our students find that? So most likely our audience right now is our undergraduate chemical engineers who are sort of just starting their journey through our degree program. Where in their undergraduate curriculum would they be exposed to the principles in particular that you were just talking about, for example, if they're interested in pharmaceuticals or medicine or something like that? Which core courses could they look at and say, I'm probably going to need that later on?
So I would say for our undergraduate, especially at our UC San Diego's curriculum, probably during the junior and the senior years, and all the core courses we provided to them, these are highly related and to what I just described. Because in the lower division class, it's more general. It's sort of like they get into college, they start to build their general knowledge foundation. But once they get to the up division, now these courses, I think all of them are quite important. very important. So what I described this how to expand of the things is not determined by one course or two. It's collectively determined by the curriculum we provided to them. Mm-hmm.
I especially appreciate, as the chair of our program, that response of, no, all of our classes are important.
It is.
You
it
should
is
take all
important.
Of them. Yeah. As you mentioned quite a few times, you know, your background has been in chemical engineering. I believe every one of your degrees, I think with the exception of, was it your BS or your MS was polymer science?
Actually, I think all of my degrees are in chemical engineering.
It was
from
chemical
bachelor
engineering
to master, mm-hmm. PhD, and even postdoc training was in chemical mm-hmm. engineering area. And when I joined UC San Diego, I thought that now I might not be in chemical engineering anymore. It's nanoengineering. Then mm-hmm. we find this is still chemical engineering. Yeah.
So what was the, when you were going through high school or grade school or something around that level, was chemical engineering something that you knew about, or was it something that you discovered when you got to college?
I think it's something I got to know during college time. So when mm-hmm. I was in high school, I'm actually very good at the chemistry, super mm-hmm. good at the chemistry. And but meanwhile, I'm very interested in applied science. So I like to build things to make things work. And then if someone is good at the chemistry, then naturally you think you may choose a chemistry or biochemistry major. But those are more on the science, basic science area and the physical science area. And then when I was admitted to the college, there's a chemical engineering major. And that's how I get into the chemical engineering field. But once I started, then I just somehow liked it so much.
Yeah, I think that was quite similar to what happened to me. Was it sounded a little interesting on paper, but I didn't really realize how much I liked it until I actually got into it and started really learning it in more detail.
Yeah.
Was there a particular, so for me, when I first started, it was a shock going from the way that I used to learn in high school, which was mostly you just kind of show up every day and you do the homework and you end up doing okay on quizzes. And then I sort of hit a wall when I got to college because that particular path doesn't work, that routine didn't work for me anymore. And it was quite challenging to really teach myself how I am supposed to learn this material. Was there a course that was particularly challenging for you or a particular adaption that you had to make that was particularly challenging?
Generally speaking, I think I'm very good at the coursework. Uh-huh. I didn't see any course that is very challenging to me during my college and the graduate school time. But mm-hmm. I do see one thing that is, it is challenging at the beginning, but further brought me to this chemical engineering area is, I think during my third year, the beginning of my third year, maybe the end of my second year, I find a research laboratory in the university, and I joined that laboratory to become an undergrad researcher, or you can call it an intern. And I feel that experience was particularly important to me, because mm-hmm. I learned all these things in the textbook, and as I said, I'm typically a pretty good student in terms of this GPA and the coursework. And but when I joined that lab, now I actually was facing this real problem, right? Because the professor asked me to use that project is more on the traditional chemical engineering about the rubber and the plastics, and then how to change the process, the manufacturing process, and then to improve certain properties of the material. And so it's just like suddenly you find that now you are facing a completely different problem, because in the classroom, our professors teach us how to identify a problem and then find a solution, and you solve the problem, and then you check whether your solution is correct or not. But now you will see that when you have this small, teeny, tiny project, now you know exactly, see, everything becomes very real, right? Your real problem is, okay, this is a sort of like a chemical engineering, the material here. And if we want to make this toughness of this rubber 10 times more, and that is a problem. And in order to do that, you need to dope some other things like the particle, other things inside. But how are you going to make them uniformly distributed throughout your matrix? That's a very real diffusion problem. Mm-hmm. And how are you going to change and tune the temperature? And how are you going to change other mechanical properties to achieve this goal? I think suddenly everything becomes very real, and you start to solve these problems, and you find it's very much connected to what you learn, and it further build up my interest. Yeah. So I know many of our undergraduate students are doing the same thing. They try to look for lab working in the real research settings. That's a really great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Was there something that pushed you in a particular direction of research as opposed to industry, or did you have some experience in industry as you were going through your college program?
No, I always worked in the academic setting. I don't have any the direct industry working experience, even though we had some summer internship in some industry setting.
Mm-hmm. Was it more of a gradual realization that, you know, I really like the core engineering of this, I want to get into it more through the research element? Or was there, you know, a particular event or maybe a seminar or a person that you encountered that said to yourself, this is definitely the direction I want to go?
Yeah, that was really during my college time. And It's a part of the requirement, and for the college, the Tsinghua University, where I graduated, for all the chemical engineering students, if you before you graduate, you got to spend a summer working in a real like a company, and as an industrial intern, and then you need it's like a regular employee. You mm-hmm. went to the place in the morning and finish everything in the afternoon and so on. And then you need to write a comprehensive report about your entire internship experience. And that I think is quite helpful. And it just helps me to understand more about the settings outside of the classroom or the universities.
Mm-hmm. You said that was at Tsinghua?
Yeah.
Was that near home or was that far away from home?
That's pretty far from my home. It was in Beijing, and I lived in a city close to Shanghai, so it's pretty far from my home.
If you were to drive from one to the other, I like to try to visualize how far something is by figuring out how long would it take me to drive from one to the other.
So I remember we used to take, well, by that time, there's no high-speed train, and we take mm-hmm. this slow train. It's about 24 hours, but now it is about 3 or 4 hours using the high-speed train, I would say.
That's quite a difference from a whole day.
It's a very different, yeah.
Was there a personal motivation for you to go close to home or to go far away from home? Or was it, you know, this is the excellent university, so that's kind of where I need to go?
I think the major driver probably is still the reputation of the university, because mm-hmm. I like the engineering, and Tsinghua is certainly the number one engineering school. Now, of course, it's more like a comprehensive university, but at that time, engineering is absolutely the top notch in China.
Mm-hmm.
Every student wanted to join that university. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was an even bigger jump then, right? Because after your BS and your MS, your PhD was at University of Illinois.
Yes.
I think that might not be one of those schools that our students initially recognize as outstanding at chemical and biomolecular engineering, because it's not one of those, you know, traditional top five or something.
Uh-huh.
But that's something that I think I've tried to communicate to our students, is it's not always just go to the top five, right? The program that you're interested in may not be at its best at one of those top five, and you might want to go somewhere else because they could be better. What was the realization for you that University of Illinois was even an option, right? Let alone one of the top in the country.
Yeah. I think you really brought up a very good point. And also, I always convey this information to the students that I interact with. And once to the certain level, especially to the graduate level, and you are not like chasing the brand of the university name. You are following the major, right? What area you are interested. For example, after I finished my BS and MS, I was in chemical engineering area, especially during master time. I focused on the polymer area. And, you know, polymer science and engineering is also a branch of chemical engineering. You can work with these different plastics and rubbers and then study the polymers. So I just feel that what I learned during this bachelor time, the fundamental knowledge, and also the experiments I have done for my master's thesis research, it's quite cool, but I just feel it's not enough. So, I'm very specific that I want to improve my knowledge in the polymer science and engineering area. Because, you know, the graduate school this year, you know, it's like a college, you learn a lot. But the more you go up to academic, your area becomes narrower and narrower. You need to focus on a point. So my focal point is about the polymer science. So when I applied for the graduate school in the U.S., actually, I applied only to those like institutes who are very top and good at polymers. And University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and they have a good chemical engineering program, but they have strong polymer science as well. Mm-hmm. And that's why, and of course, I applied to other schools. They're still also good at the polymers. And that's why I joined this. And it really, because you know, the institute's name is very important, and but you need to look a little, you need to zoom in to look at the specific areas that you are interested in. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Steve, I saw you leaning into your mic there. Were you going to ask something real quick?
No, sorry.
Okay. I guess, Liangfang, one of the things that you had mentioned there was, you know, polymer engineering is not that far away from chemical engineering, right? Mm-hmm. So many of the principles are the same, but you kind of have to add a few new components to it. One thing that very frequently gets, I don't want to say confused with chemical engineering, but maybe aliased with chemical engineering is just plain old chemistry, right? So a number of our students, I think at this point, would probably be able to explain what they think is the difference between chemical engineering and chemistry, because I've asked this question a few times of our various guests. If a student were to ask you, say a high school student interested in chemical engineering, what is the difference between chemistry and chemical engineering, what would you tell them?
Well, apparently chemical engineering has much less chemistry. And you know, chemistry is more, I would say, on this like a physical science area. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of about these chemical reactions. And the when I say chemical, it's really chemical, like the from compound A and B, you react and generate a C. So this is on the molecule and the material level, you have such a reaction. But for our chemical engineering, I think we care more about the science and engineering behind that reaction. For example, how to calculate the reaction, the yield, and how to control that reaction, right? So chemistry is more on the molecular level to enable and such a reaction to create a new compound and a molecule. Chemical engineering is more on the larger scale, and this massive amount of the material, and then you generate this to control the reaction, to determine the yield and the purity, and make it as a material, and use it. So that's why chemical engineering is in the engineering major, and the chemistry we still consider more on the physical science major.
Mm-hmm. A lot of our students are looking to their future with an eye towards their technical electives and their advanced chemistry electives and those sorts of options in their schedule. Is there a particular route that you encourage students to take when they're picking their advanced chemistry electives?
So I certainly encourage all the students, if you can, well, you take care of all your core course related to chemical engineering, and then try to expand your vision and your knowledge by taking other more electives. And this, I think chemistry is a great area to look into, because even though we are working on this larger scale of the reaction and of the products, but you know, the fundamentally, you still need to look at the molecular level of these reactions and so on. So this means if you can accumulate more knowledge from the chemistry side, and then you combine what you learn on the engineering about the larger scale, this really gives you a complete set of the knowledge to do things, right? No matter you are going to go to graduate school or you will join the industry workforce, I think it will be very beneficial. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I deliberately ask them. Well, I don't ask them to leave it blank, but I let everyone know that when they're filling out their schedules, you don't need to tell us exactly which advanced chemistries you want to take now, because you can give yourself a little bit of time to get into chemical engineering and find out what's interesting to you, so that you can then see where the chemistry is coming in and pick appropriate courses as you go. Speaking of courses, where would our students bump into you? Where would our undergraduates bump into you in our curriculum?
I typically teach the CNG 122, the separation process, and also the CNG 176, the senior design lab. I somehow like the senior design lab very much. I think that is a course is lots of interactions with the students and the way we. As a capstone class, and it's somehow it's very attractive to me, and also I think it's important to our student too. Mm-hmm.
It is sort of like a miniature research project on a lot of them, which I think gets back to something you had mentioned earlier of to actually have a problem in front of you to which you have to apply everything that you've learned is such a different experience than. Here's a short paragraph for a homework problem or an exam or something like that, you know, do the answer afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I also enjoy 176 for a similar reason of having that opportunity to actually apply some of the things that you've learned to a real problem.
Yeah.
You can't fake, you can't convince the heater that it's doing something wrong, right? The heater is going to do whatever it's doing, and it's up to you to understand why it's doing this. There's no shortcut around.
That's right. Yeah.
Something like that. Is there any particular skill set that you could recommend that our students, maybe that you've seen is often overlooked, you know, a particular study habit or a particular opinion that they might have that you would like to address or just a good habit that you think they should get into to find success in our program?
So I don't think that I have anything very specific. But on the general level, I think for all undergraduate students in our program, and we need to build up the fundamental knowledge by doing well in all the courses. And on top of that, and if time allows, and if you have extra like interest and efforts, try to do something outside of the curriculum. And here I actually particularly want to say if there's any chance to do some extra laboratory work, it will be a very important skill set to our student.
What do you think that will look like? I realize everything changes day to day right now because of COVID-19. How do you suggest that undergraduate students try to pursue that as best they can, given the circumstances right now?
Well, now, of course, it's very difficult to achieve that goal because this 2020 is just such a special year, and it is it is to not just our undergrads, but also graduate students and faculty as well. It is very difficult to do. Even at this difficult time, I still encourage that if you can get involved to some laboratory and join the laboratory research meeting, and then even do some literature projects. In my lab, we normally have about 10 undergraduate students, and during this period of time, we actually still paid attention to them, and we assign them to do some small literature review and to understand about this scientific field, and then come up and join these weekly lab meetings or meeting with the senior researcher, just to keep them engaged, you know. So I think it is helpful in terms of that, one, you learn something, you still, you know, because there are so many things to read. Sometimes if there's no guidance, you may not know what to read, what to do, right?
Right. And, it can very easily be overwhelming with the amount of, other things, publications out there. Yeah.
And then the second thing, I feel that keep them engaged with the senior researchers and students in the lab on a weekly basis, it's also very helpful. Yeah. But the pandemic will be over sooner or later. And after that, I think they really should be able to work in the lab directly. And when they work in the lab, they can learn something, some skills, and oftentimes they actually can be working on some real specific projects, right? For some students, if they devote enough time, of course it's challenging. You got for research, and once you touch it, it needs you to really devote a certain effort and time. And if you devote enough time and a project goes well, and oftentimes, actually, our undergraduate students can become a co-author of some scientific publication, because that's a really rewarding things to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the act of reading through literature and finding out what has been done is maybe a little bit underappreciated the first few years that you're going through a graduate program, because, you know, I for one was excited. I want to go into the lab, right? I don't care what everybody else did. I'm the first one to do it right. And then you realize that's never going to fly, right? There's no way that you can do the work in the lab of everyone that has already come before you. And I think there's a phrase that they use. I think a 2 weeks in the lab will save you an hour in the library. That was a slow realization for me, but eventually it really sunk in. You really have to start with that base when you're doing your research, of understanding what has already been done, so that you don't just reinvent the wheel. Every time you walk into the lab. Yeah. So you can't go see a movie. You can't get together in large groups. How has the chair of the chemical engineering program been keeping his sanity outside of school over the last few months?
I think it's pretty much like all of us. And this is a very difficult period of time. And this is the period of time, not just on the personal level, but also, you know, you take care of family and then take care of the academic units and my own research group and our chemical engineering program. It's just like, it's quite, to be honest, it's quite a stressful period of time. Mm-hmm. And even working at home or working in the office, and there are lots of meetings ongoing, and then still eat a lot of the time, but whenever there's some free time, I still want to do something else. I like to read something that is not about my research, not related to my research, because I read enough about all these journals and the papers. I like to read the scientific fiction, and if you find a good book, actually find it's a great way to kill time. And
what's the most recent book that you've read?
There's a book called Three Body. And,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, if you take a look at that, that is probably one of the most popular scientific fiction book written by, it's a couple of years ago. It's this three series, 1, 2, 3. And mm-hmm. It's a award-winning novel, scientific novel. It's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's usually where I go to get my science fiction is the, I think there's the Hugo Awards that come out once a year or something like that. Uh-huh. And I usually keep an eye towards those because I read similar books from the same
I just
area.
Feel it's a fun and, you know, that is, everything there is not real now. And right. It brings your mind completely somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I think that sort of wraps up most of the core questions I was after. Steve, anything you want to follow up on before we wrap
it
up?
If you don't mind, I'd just like to go back to something we started before I interrupted you. I apologize for that earlier. You were talking about your research, and I look at your research as very cutting edge and very interesting applications of chemi and nano. I was just wondering, I noticed that you recently published a paper on COVID. I was wondering what some of the work that you've been doing on COVID since this students might want to hear more about, you know, what's going on in that area, especially at this time.
Uh-huh. Sure, Steve. This is whenever I talk about my research, I'm very excited about it.
Yes.
And so since early of this year, and when the SARS-CoV-2 occurred, and we started to look into this problem, and in my lab, simply speaking, we develop a cellular nanosponge technology as a new treatment of coronavirus. And when I say new, then like what is the advantage of this is, in fact, this is a great example. We talk a little bit more, and also you will see how chemical engineering is so important and involved even to this type of research.
Right.
So you think this way, for SARS-CoV-2, it is a family of the SARS and a coronavirus family, but it binds to this new called ACE2 receptors and other receptors. Of course, when this virus first occurred, nobody knows what receptor it will bind, or is it only one receptor or two or more? Because the traditional way when people design this drug is you identify what this virus bind to, and then you find the antibody or drug to block that, right? So this is how it works. But if this virus is so new and called a novel virus, so it may bind to multiple receptors. And this way, actually, you will have the challenge that you miss the other receptors. That's why it's very hard to treat. So my lab, what we did is we use this called, we collected the natural cell membrane from human cells. And this cell membrane has all the natural receptors on the surface. And for example, one work we did earlier this year, we took the human lung epithelial cells. This is one of the cells in our lung and the coronavirus attack. And on this cell membrane, there are hundreds of different types of receptors. The coronavirus may attack through one receptor or two or a combination of more, but doesn't matter. As long as it is coronavirus, it has to attack our lung cells, right? And now what we do is we use this lung cell membrane, which contains all the natural receptors, and make them to a nanoparticle formulation. We infuse that back to the body. Now they serve as the lung cell decoy because they bear exactly the same receptor that the coronavirus rely on to attack.
Is this similar to your cloaking work that you've done before?
Yes.
That you've done?
It is a cell membrane cloaking technology, but we adopt it and use it in a new way.
Nice.
To treat the virus. And that's the work we did, and we actually tested that when we use the human lung epithelial cell membrane cloaking to make this nanoparticle, we actually neutralize the human isolated SARS-CoV-2 by up to 92% of their infectivity. This is not a simple binding. It's really block them and stop them from infecting human cells. And for this work, now you see that why these things it works from experimental point of view. Of course, it works because you test it. It worked so well, right? But if you look at that, the science behind this, actually, now it really involves, for example, the virus, they bind to these receptors, and then the same receptor stays on the human cell as well. Now, so there is a competition, right? So this comes to the possibility the virus will bind to the nanodecoy, or the virus will bind to the host cell. But if you see that, if you have a gigantic cell, which is like a 20 micron size, and when we collected the membrane, so one cell will give us enough membrane to make over 10,000 of this nanodecoy. So now you can see that when one big cell surrounding by 10,000 of these smaller nanodecoy, when the virus comes, it comes to this like the collision frequency, right? Mm-hmm. Which one they will bind more frequently. When they hit the corona, the nanodecoy, they will bind to the nanodecoy. When they hit this real cell, they will bind to the cell. So there are a lot of the engineering principles here. Now you need to consider the overall diffusion rate of these particles in the lung or in the body fluid. And also you need to consider the collision frequency between these virus and these smaller nanodecoy versus the bigger cells. And also you need to consider the binding kinetics. When the virus bind to the receptor, they can detach, but there is a kinetics. Based upon that, the kinetics determine what is your dosage, right? So only when your decoy concentration is high enough, you can overwhelm all these viruses and neutralize them. So it looks like a pure medical research. Eventually, you need to verify whether it works to neutralize the virus. But you really needed to do a lot of the fundamental thinking and understanding to design your system to predict the dosage before you do the test. Yeah.
Wow, thank you very much. Mm. That's good. Good explanation.
If our students were interested in that, because it's obviously so pertinent to the things that we're doing right now, do you have regular weekly meetings that our students could sort of be, you know, little flies on the wall or try to get more involved with your group?
So currently, because this type of research, most of my research actually is funded by the Department of Defense and others, and some of the projects, you know, academically, you have certain confidentiality things before you can mm-hmm. publicly make it available. So it's open to only the group members. They mm-hmm. affiliated to my lab, so they are subjected to this overall, like this laboratory research or this overall, like a working related confidentiality. They, because if you spread it out too early, actually it will cause damage to those researchers who worked on these papers, right?
I see.
Need to file patents and we need to do the publications, but we are open to all the lab member. This is for the unpublished work. But for the published work, we make it available, we disseminate it through the different, like earlier this year, I gave the whole department's seminar and give many different lectures to the students' organizations, and we will share everything to students.
Yeah. I guess we don't have to cut anything from our podcast, right? Everything you just said is okay to be publicized because it will be publicly available.
Definitely.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Just making sure. I didn't want to get anybody in trouble or anything like that.
Yeah. But I think this is, it's up to you. If you want to keep that part, it's okay. But if you think this is more about how we run the research in the university and the confidentiality things, and if you don't want to make it to public, you can cut this last question off.
Oh, no. I think anytime that we can kind of, you know, part the curtains and say, you know, there's all this other stuff that you may not be aware of that happens in research and in universities and academia and all that kind of stuff. I want everybody to know, as long as we don't get you in trouble.
Uh-huh. No trouble.
Get you in trouble. Okay, great. So usually when we get to the end of the podcast, right, we're coming up on our hour here. You'd like to go out on a lighter note. I emailed you a few questions beforehand. If it's okay with you, we'll finish up with those.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. So the first one is, what's your favorite word?
And I, to be honest, I think these are very difficult questions. It's more difficult than what we talked so far, because there are so many words. And when I look at this question, I think what will be my favorite? I think the words will be pretty simple. I think it's yes.
Okay, so I then have a guess for the next one. What's your least favorite word?
Never.
Okay, so it's related.
That's a true researcher.
Yes, true researcher. Yeah, I think was that Dr. Bay's least favorite word too? I think hers might have been never.
I think so. Yeah,
it might have been exactly that. Same.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I'll have to go back and listen to our podcast, but hers may have been never as well. For the third question, so we're recording the podcast, and I can go back and beep anything that you would like to say. So if you would like to actually say the word, you can. What is your favorite curse word?
Yeah, we can just probably beep this one out.
Yes, we will beep it.
Yeah.
And then, so your fourth one is, what career other than your own would you most like to attempt?
So if I was not an academic professor, and I think the next career that I'm interested will be an entrepreneur.
Oh, anyway, do you have a particular idea in mind that's sort of been knocking around for a while?
So
or would you like to keep that to yourself because you may end up using it?
That's true.
No, I just feel that in the academic, you have done a lot of the cool and great research. And then research ultimately is to make the community better, to serve the overall population at large. So if we can translate what the scientists have done in the lab and to the real world, and that process is very attractive and very interesting to me. And doing some companies, and then that would be very cool. Mm-hmm.
And then finally, what career other than your own would you least like to attempt?
Well, there are many. and I think if you have to pick one, I would say pilot.
Really? That was actually something when I was very young, I was interested in being a pilot, but for whatever reason.
I just feel scared at the very high and tall place.
That's understandable, certainly. Well, Dr. Liangfang Zhang, thank you so much for spending some time with our students. I'm sure they're really going to appreciate it.
Definitely my pleasure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so too, much. And take care.